Final hour of the day, final hour of the week. The Rob Brown Show, the Back 60, start now. Welcome back, Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo, and you. 844-326-3663 is the number. 844-FANFONE. If you'd like to be a part of the show, you're welcome to do it. Text that number, the Hub City Smart Burger text line. You can also call that number, 844-326-3663. If you'd like to be a part of the radio program, do it now. Jump on board. Anything, everything you want to get to, you can get to now on the radio program for the final hour of the show. We have got a few more things I want to get to before we get up out of here, but I have to show some appreciation. I was yesterday kind of skipping around some baseball, and I stumbled into the Yankees game, and there was a kid that they showed on the TV who was holding up a sign that said, I skipt school. I skipped school for this. That kid's going places. That kid gets it. That kid gets it. Fantastic sign. Good kid. All right. We have talked some NBA draft this morning. I really like what the Atlanta Hawks did in this draft. They ended up with only one player, Asa Newell, who I think is not just a good fit, but having played his ball at the University of Georgia, that's a good local fit too. And Georgia had a good run last year. Asa Newell was a big part of the reason why. On the flip side, I love what the Charlotte Hornets did in this draft. Con Knipple was not the guy I would have picked there. However, we also got the report that Ace Bailey, the young man out of Rutgers, who was probably the second most talented player in this draft, we got a report yesterday that his agent told at least one player, one team inside the top five, that if you pick Ace Bailey, he's not going to report. He will not show up. Now, there's a couple of theories that are floating around about that right now. One of them is that it is possible that Ace Bailey is having his career way too early, overly manipulated by his agent. Obviously, his agent is going to get paid based on what it is that Ace Bailey gets paid moving into the NBA. And there is the possibility that this is just an agent who thought, you know, if I keep him away from a team that maybe isn't willing to overpay a little bit. And obviously, rookie contracts are pretty much set at least around a particular value. But we have also seen the last couple of years when a rook steps up and performs, teams are willing to give those first extensions earlier. Keep in mind, you are trying to make sure that when that rookie is eligible to move on from your team, you would like to have them in love with your team. I saw a social media clip earlier in the week that came from Desmond Bane, the kid that got traded from Memphis to Orlando a few days ago. Desmond Bane said that working out in Memphis was like working out in a dungeon. They asked him, now that he's in Orlando and he's been working out with the Magic for a couple of weeks, a reporter asked him earlier this week, what's the best thing about the trade to Orlando? Kind of thought you were going to be a longtime piece there in Memphis, but they send you down here. What's the best part about it? And the response he gave was, sarcastically, but then also not, they have windows here. The reporter was like, what? They got what now? And he said, yeah, in Memphis. He said the training facility in Memphis was like working out in a dungeon because there's no windows. It's totally enclosed. He said it's they kind of cheap out, without saying it, they kind of cheap out in the on the facilities in Memphis. Now I'm at a place that has great facilities because you want to keep people in Orlando. And he said it's like a different world. It feels better. It feels like a different world here. So you want to, when you have rookies, especially
in Memphis, from what I hear, you don't want to see what's going on outside. So you just keep those.
Yeah, Memphis is in an interest. There was a whole conversation about this last week because Loudmouth McGee from ESPN said that free agents don't want to go to Memphis because you can't walk around. You can't go outside. Can't walk around outside. I've not been to Memphis yet. I've got a couple of friends that love Memphis. The wife loves Memphis. She's been trying to organize us on a Memphis trip because I've never been there. And I looked it up because I'm curious. There actually is a well above the national average crime rate in Memphis. It is also one of the most rapidly declining crime rates in the United States. They have a crime rate that is higher than the national average, but is trending downwards faster than most of the rest of the cities in that bracket.
As long as it's not declining because people are like, yeah, I'm not going there.
No, or because they're running out of people.
Well, there could be that too. You definitely don't want that to happen.
No, they have in the past couple of years, they have had a change in city leadership that has taken a renewed interest in ways to solve that issue. And it seems to be working pretty well for them so far. Blah, blah, blah. The point here is players allegedly did not want to be in Memphis. So what happens is a team like a Memphis, and for a variety of different reasons, there are many teams across the league that really are only going to be able to succeed if they home grow talent, succeed, and then reap the benefits that come along with being a championship team. Players are obviously willing to put up with a lot more if they believe that by playing for your team, they are going to have a chance to call themselves champions. But you've got to get it right with the draft and with development of players. This is why I've pointed out the best thing that a program can have going for itself in the NBA is a great GM and an excellent talent development program. You got to have those two things. Oklahoma City has those two things. They have drafted exceptionally well as of late. And not only have they drafted exceptionally well, but they are very clearly figuring out how to properly develop young talent. That is why OKC, one of the youngest teams in the league, is now your reigning, defending, undisputed NBA world basketball champions. There's something to be said for that. This is why I'm interested in Charles Lee, the head coach of the Charlotte Hornets right now. I am interested in Charles Lee, the head coach of the Charlotte Hornets, and we talked about this earlier in the week, because of one set of decisions that he made last year. Earlier in the year, LaMelo Ball was being looked at as a potential all-star at the point guard position. In fact, there were a few weeks there where one of the trending conversations in the NBA is Ball one of the best point guards in the league right now? Because he was playing like it. The problem was he was a one-way player. He was not playing any defense. In fact, it almost looked like in many spots he was refusing to play defense for this team. And what ended up happening was a handful of weeks into that run, Charles Lee sat LaMelo Ball, who, again, was in conversations of being an all-star at that point. And while that was a relatively controversial decision, that was one of those decisions that a head coach makes to try to set the culture. And again, if you try to set that culture and it doesn't take, you will lose the locker room. But if you try to set that culture and that culture takes and the team buys into it, you end up with an Oklahoma City Thunder situation where everybody's on the same page. The boys are the boys. They're all working together, yada, yada, yada. And that's great news. This is part of the reason that I very much liked the draft that the Charlotte Hornets just put together, because you ended up with not just Con Knipple, the young man out of Duke, but you also ended up with Cyan James, his teammate from Duke. You ended up with the second best Duke player in the draft, the first obviously being number one overall draft pick Cooper Flagg. You ended up with a guy who stepped in for Cooper Flagg when Cooper Flagg got banged up in the ACC tournament last year and didn't just step in for Cooper Flagg, but stepped in and did an admirable job becoming, for a couple of weeks, the primary scorer for the Duke University Blue Devils. So you brought him in. He is absolutely a dude, from everything that I read, that is going to be a culture guy, is going to be a guy that's the, yeah, coach, whatever you say goes kind of player, will play within the culture, within the system, and you brought in one of his teammates, a lesser impact teammate, a teammate that's got more work to do, but you brought in one of his teammates, which means you now have them as rookies, sure, but as a tag team of dudes who are likely going to buy in. If you can get dudes to buy in, if you can get guys to buy in, if you want to have that type of culture in your locker room, you have got to have guys that buy in. You have got to have guys that want to succeed within your culture, within your locker room. It feels like the Hornets made that draft, but they also got dudes who fit in with where that team is as a team right now, fit in with the spots that they needed to improve. They needed to have a 7-footer. They went and they found that guy late in the draft. They needed an outside shooting threat that can be the Pascal Siakam to LaMelo's Tyrese Halliburton. They got that guy in Con Knipple. They needed a tough-nosed wing defender who can play the opposite wing alongside the multiple wingers you've got on this team. You got that. Can play opposite Con Knipple. You got that in Cyan James. I really like what this team did, and now it's going to be a matter of Charles Lee, who has made it very clear, at least to me, that he is going to be a locker room and culture-oriented coach. It makes it feel to me like he is starting to build that franchise up in his image. And I like this draft because it fits in with that. I like what they did. I also like we mentioned, I also like what the Hawks did. I like what the Hawks did, just the one player in Asa Newell, but they also got New Orleans' unprotected first-round draft pick from next year. That team, and again, this is a gamble, the Pelicans, by trading that pick away, are rolling the dice that they figured it out. They are rolling the dice that even in the West, you know how much different I would feel about this pick if New Orleans was in the East? Think about what the East is next year. The Celtics ain't doing nothing without Jason Tatum, who's out with an Achilles. Respectfully, as much as I loved their run this year and was a supporter towards the end of the run, the Pacers ain't doing nothing without Tyrese Halliburton next year. The Bucks have Giannis Antetokounmpo, arguably the second best player in the NBA. But without pairing him up with Dame Lillard and the rest of that roster being what it is, the Bucks ain't doing nothing in the East next year without Dame Lillard. They can probably get in, but they're not a threat. The Knicks got to the Eastern Conference Finals this year. I do think it is a good Knicks team. But when they got there and they got run by the Pacers, I think they are a good team. Do they have championship pedigree? Let's say yes for the sake of the conversation. The East next year is New York. Genuine question, is anybody afraid of the Philadelphia 76ers anymore? I'm not. So it's New York. It's Cade and the Pistons. It's Paolo in Orlando. Like, I think that's the competition for the premier spot in the Eastern Conference next year. And if that is indeed the case, not only does that position teams in the East well if they build up right, but it makes New Orleans' pick in the West, which is where it feels like the majority of the competition is this year, next year, it makes it feel like that draft pick will be more valuable for the Hawks as it's based on the results of New Orleans' season than Atlanta's. That's a great pickup. You still got your dude at 23. You added an unprotected first from a team that thinks they figured it out, but if they got it wrong, and if they are wrong next year, that pick could be as high as an early lottery pick. I love what the Hawks did. I love what the Hornets did. Both of them catching an A from Rob Brown for the 2025 NBA draft. All right, when we come back here in just a minute, got a few more things I want to run into. Got a couple of college football stories that I want to get you through. Got a little baseball because the Atlanta Braves are at the crib this weekend for a 3-game set against the Philadelphia Phillies. We'll talk about that next on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. The Atlanta Braves drop a 4-0 shutout loss to the New York Metropolitans last night. It was the second loss in a row for Atlanta, coming off of back-to-back wins over the Mets against by Atlanta. Pardon me. They are 5-2 against the Mets, who now hold a half-game lead over the Phillies for first place in the NL East. The Phillies are a half game back. The Braves are 10 games back of the Mets, obviously 9.5 games back now of Philadelphia for second in the division. There's a couple of different angles that I want to talk to this. Number one, I don't know what needs to be said or done, how it's handled. Something's got to be done about this offense. The problem isn't that guys fade. It's that the team picks these spots to fade. Last night, you were up against Griffin Canning, starting pitcher for the Mets. And Griffin Canning's been very good. If you told me it was a Griffin Canning start and the Braves were going to end with 3 hits on the night, I'd have said, all right, that guy clearly had a lights-out performance. Griffin Canning left after 2.1 innings, popped his Achilles, getting off the mound with after a comebacker hit right back up the gut. The Mets had to go effectively to a bullpen game. And the Braves, against the extended effort of the middle relief and the back end pitchers for the Mets, suddenly just can't hit a baseball anymore. And this has kind of been the problem. Remember what I said to you earlier in the week when we talked about it. The issue that Atlanta has right now is that consistency is not a thing for this ball club. They will go out and they will run off 2 or 3 or 4 in a row. However, they will then turn around and they will completely disappear for 2 or 3 or 4 in a row. Every time they go on a little charge to make something happen, they just turn around and stop. They had the 3-game sweep over the Mets last week at home. And it was like, all right, maybe this is the start of it. I know we're not even halfway home. You are running out of runway already. You're 10 games back. My take was a couple of days ago when you were 9.5 back with 2 to play against the Mets in this series and the Phillies coming up next. My take was if this team can get into the All-Star break within 6 games, I feel pretty good. Because remember, they have made in the last few years multiple playoff runs despite being 5 or 6 back at the All-Star break. So I am happy to go benefit of the doubt and say if you're within 6 at the break, you've at least given yourself a chance. I do not think you can go into the break back 9-plus games and make a run. I don't think that is a realistic possibility for this team. So when you get handed an opportunity like you had last night, where one of the best hurlers on that team is forced to leave a game, and I hope against hope it is not an Achilles pop, but it definitely is. I literally saw it happen. I was watching the game. If you get an opportunity like that, you hate to say take an opportunity because a guy had to leave the game with a season ending, probably next year season canceling, and potentially career ending injury. it made me sick. I hated it for him. I hated it for New York. And I don't hate anything bad happening to New York. But I hated that moment. But it was an opportunity. It was an opportunity for the Braves to go out there against secondary pitchers for the Mets for seven innings of baseball and to win that game. To win that series 3-1, to end the first half 6-1 against the New York Mets after the loss the night before. And in that moment, that was where the team ends up hitting three baseballs. It's just not good enough. It's just not good enough. Dewey texts the show on the Hub City Spartanburger text line at 844-326-3663 and says, hitting coaches need to be held accountable for starters. No excuse for being shut out by a team with a weak bullpen. And that is exactly correct. That is exactly correct. The Mets starting pitching is the, well, in their offense, the Mets starting pitching is the reason that the Mets are currently in first place in this division. Their pitching, including Griffin Canning, has been lights out. It has been a combination of starters repeatedly being able to go 6-7 innings and hold teams to a run or less, and the Mets offense, even when Juan Soto has been cold, the Mets offense being capable of putting up 6 or 7 with great regularity. So when you get into that spot where the Braves pitching has been, with a couple of exceptions, performing well enough throughout the year. Somebody put up the stat the other day that if you took Braves starters and you removed every loss that they had to take an L, that they allowed 3 runs or fewer, the Braves starting pitching has one of the best win percentages in baseball. Like, that's how bad it has been, right? So when you're getting that out of your starters, when you're getting that out of your starters, and when you are in a game where their starter gets removed after 2 innings, and then you go up against a team that is winning because of starting pitching and offense, but who their bullpen is a bit of a liability for a team that does now have World Series aspirations. And the best you can do is 3 hits and a shutout loss. That's just not it. Now, again, I'm going to not hit the eject button until we get to the All-Star break on the 13th or whatever it is. I'm not going to hit the eject button. I'm going to say, if you're within 6, I'll come into the back half with like an, okay, maybe it can be done. But if you're going to get to within 6, games like yesterday, you have to win. It's not an option. You split a series with New York that you absolutely should have won 3-1. We should be talking this morning about the Braves going 6-1 against the division leaders. That's what we should be talking about. I'd feel real good about that. Instead, it's 5-2. And like I said, if you'd have told me to start the season that the Braves were going to end the first half 5-2 against the Mets, I'd have said, I'll take it. I'll take it. But the conversation needs to be held in context. The context is they went 5-2, and there was no reason not to go 6-1. And before you go, well, wait a minute, Rob, it's just one game. It's just one game. You are correct. If you are 6 games back at the All-Star break, your goal is to win this division by just one game. Like that's the goal you have to set for yourself here is we can go from 6 to get back within 1. But losses like that are how being up by 1 turn into being down by 1 when we get to the end of the year. There's one more spot that kind of stings, but I think we got to send it. Michael Harris II needs to be sent to the minors. He needs to be sent down to Gwinnett to figure it out. I went and looked, dating back to June 17th. Michael Harris II has played in 9 baseball games, dating back to the opening of the 3-game series at home against New York. In those games, Michael Harris is 0-4, 0-4, 0-4, 0-4, 1-4, 1-4, 0-4, 0-3, 0-2, 0-4, 0-3. He has two hits dating back to the start of the three-game series against the Mets at home on June 17th. He has two hits. Two hits in, I'm real bad at math, but that's 24, 27, 28, 29, 33, 36 at-bats. He's 2-for-36. Now, how many walks did Michael Harris II draw in that time span? Because, you know, if a guy's only got two hits in 36 at-bats, but he's got 7, 8, 9, 10 walks, I'll count that. In that entire stretch of time, three against the Mets, three on the roads at the Marlins, four against the Mets on the road. He has zero walks. Zero walks. He has zero walks, one stolen base in that period of time. That's not it. Now, Michael Harris II has been an absolute machine in the outfield for Atlanta. He's got multiple stolen home runs. Nobody's running on him. Yada, yada, yada. That's all well and good. Here's the thing. There is a point where your defensive prowess does not match up with you being an extreme liability at the plate. And for all Michael Harris II has done for this ball club, I am very sorry. It is not personal. It is business. What's best for the team is what the decision needs to be. This guy needs to be sent down. He needs, and I hope that he goes down to Gwinnett. The pressure, I can't imagine he's not feeling some pressure right now. He knows what his stats are. And not only does he know what his stats are, he knows what his stats are for a losing team. Send him down to Gwinnett where there is no pressure. Send him down to just DH. I don't need him playing the field. I don't need him out there running around. Go to the dish, bring the bat, put the slow-mo video camera on him, find out what's wrong, and give him a chance to fix it. Because what I can't have is a dude going 2-for-36 with zero walks when we are in the meat and potatoes of the season. And ordinarily, this might not be the meat and potatoes of the season. You'd go, hey, as long as you're, you know, right there in that divisional race going into the All-Star break, you're fine. The problem is when you are this far below 500 and you are nowhere near the divisional race, you have accelerated the arrival of the meat and potatoes of the season. 2-for-36, zero walks in the last 10 games? 10 games. That's not good enough. Send him down. This isn't going to work. I'm at the point now where when Jurickson Profar, coming off of his 81-game suspension for PEDs, comes back, I didn't want this guy anywhere near the team. Send Michael down, put him back on the roster until Michael Harris figures it out. Back after this on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. Okay, the meteor thing. All right. So if you missed it yesterday, a very large, very bright meteor descended from the skies of the upstate around noon 30. It was very, very visible. People were talking about it all over social media, which is fine. They should. It is a cool, fascinating, natural, definitely nothing else moment that happened. And
it's not cool if you get hit by it or your house got hit by it.
In like the weirdest of ways, I actually do think it would be cool if your house got hit by it.
Seriously?
Yeah, because think about it, man. Number one, depending on the estimates you look at, there's anywhere from a one in
my house insurance won't cover anything. It's definitely not going to cover getting hit by a meteor.
There is a, depending on where you look, I have read estimates of anywhere from 1 in 100 million to 1 in 74 billion chance that your house would be hit by a falling meteor. Most of them obviously burn up well before they make contact with planet Earth, by the time that most of them burn out, most of them are, if they do hit the ground, are not very big. Houses by comparison to, you know, the universe are really small. There's a lot of land out there. The odds of your house being impacted by a meteor are smaller. No matter what estimate you look at, your odds of winning the Powerball are 1 in 292 million. So when you start talking about odds in the 1 in hundreds of million, or when you get into NASA's estimate of about 1 in a billion at smallest, that's a pretty ridiculous thing to have happen. Cool. That's a natural phenomenon that I am fascinated by. The wife came home yesterday. I had not heard about it. I was sitting in the office getting some work done. And she came home and she's like, did you hear about the fireballs? And my first thought was, I had two of them right out of the gate. First off, the degenerate in Rob Brown.
Thoughts. Yeah, two right out of the gate.
Correct.
Out of the gate.
I had two thoughts right out of the gate. The first was the degenerate Rob Brown, who thought, did Fireball change their whiskey? Because that's a brand of whiskey. It is a cinnamon-flavored whiskey. I despise Fireball with all of the fiber of my being. If I go to a party and they're like, hey, man, would you like a drink? And I say, of course I would. And they say, great. We have Fireball. I'm not drinking at your party. I'm not staying at your party. You're a bad person. I'm out. The second thought I had was, as a big time nerd, I was like, why is my wife talking about Dungeons and Dragons magical spells right now? Okay. One of my favorites. But like, why are you bringing this up? And then I said, what the hell are you talking about? And she said, I saw online that there are fireballs in the sky around Greenville, but I don't know what's going on. I've been in the car. So we took a second to look it up. We found out that it was a meteor that dropped out of the sky, and then people went to social media and started reporting that they were seeing fireballs, plural multiple, happen around the upstate.
Well, because the first thing I saw was that something that had exploded in Georgia. And then parts of it went into South Carolina.
Very possible. I don't actually know exactly where it came down, because obviously it was big enough and bright enough that it was seen over the entire upstate. It was that big and that bright. And apparently it did indeed strike a house somewhere. Noah Bergen is a, ironically enough for this segment, meteorologist for Fox 35 Orlando. And he put up a tweet that said, reports are coming in that possible pieces of this meteor went through a roof southeast of Atlanta. The odds are estimated at roughly 1 in 100 trillion per year for an individual home to be hit by a meteor. You are 740 million times more likely to be struck by lightning. Now, because when Lonzo sent this to me, immediately lost my mind over the statistical improbability of that happening, decided to go and look it up. This is, as of the last round of research, by a geologist that I follow. Shut up.
Wait. Do you follow a geologist?
Oh, I follow geologists. I follow archaeologists.
Did you just stumble on this geologist, or did you go looking for the foremost geologist?
No, I found him on my YouTube rabbit hole of dorky nerd ass, go touch grass, go outside nerd YouTube lectures that I read. This guy was doing a video on a phenomenon called the Great Raft, which was a 160-mile-long log jam that formed back in Louisiana and Texas years ago. This is true. There is one, in all of Texas, there is one natural lake. And the only reason it exists is because of this log jam that lasted for north of a century and a half. And I found this guy talking about it, and it was really fascinating. Anyway, follow that guy.
The thing that most people just skip by, and Rob's like, ooh.
Yep. Watching this 3-hour documentary on a bunch of trees in a river. 100%. Oh. So he wrote and he looked.
No, you can't see over. There's just a big bug. That is
a big bug.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Lonzo's ADHD.
And also that parking, right? Look right
no,
out there.
No, I'm not doing that.
You should look.
I'd rather look at
the bug. It's been there for a while.
No, I'm not doing that.
All right.
He wrote that he was able to, so far, confirm that this was the fifth time in the last 70 years that this happened in the United States. And if that is accurate, with roughly 147 million homes in the United States, he says that puts your odds of your house being struck by a falling meteor at roughly 1 in 1 billion per any given year. All that fascinating, all that interesting. What I need you guys to do is just take 2 minutes to look at something when it gets posted online, because people were reporting as if it was the gospel truth that there were multiple fireballs raining from the heavens. What happened yesterday is fascinating. What happened yesterday is that a space rock floating around for whom knows how many hundreds of millions or billions of years found its way into the gravitational pull of the planet, found its way through our atmosphere, burned up. By the way, it only burns a certain color as a reaction of the elements of which it is composed, reacting to the heat and friction of the atmosphere, which is why any given meteorite is the color it is, and they are not always the same color. And then descended in our little geographical piece of this big-ass planet we live on. That's awesome.
It is amazing how you could take something so exciting and make it so boring.
How is that boring?
That was extremely boring. Fireballs raining from the sky. That's exciting. You know why it burns this color stuff? I mean, come on, dude.
How
many people have seen that in their lifetime? So, of course, they're going to be excited about it.
That's the point. If you were one of the lucky chosen few.
I don't need to know the metallic makeup of the thing that's falling from the sky. All I know is something's on fire and it's falling.
If you were one of the lucky ones who were outside yesterday and got to witness this natural phenomenon, think about genuinely how lucky you are to have seen that. Why do we have to make up some ridiculous fictional story to be entertained by something that just the people in this area, you still had to be in the statistical minority to have been outside and see this in real time, right? I wasn't outside. I didn't get to see it. I only get to watch the videos of it. If you got to see it in person, you're in such a ridiculous minority of people that got to witness this incredible event.
Exactly. That's my point. And they're excited about it and they're posting about it and you are going at them because they're inaccurate about the consistency of the fire of the thing falling out of the sky.
No, quite the opposite. What I'm saying is the people who are making stuff up about this to make it more compelling, why? Why do you have to make stuff up to be more compelling? What happened is ridiculously compelling. I don't know. It's just
why do you tell the same story in a different way in different places? It's about demographics. Okay. There's a demographic out there who are not big time science nerds who are excited about seeing a meteorite.
Good. You should be. That's my point exactly. It is a compelling
story.
Why
are you throwing me in there? I mean, because I didn't see it. And I've seen meteorites before, so.
Cause you rolled
I've seen
up
a meteor
in here,
shower before, which is really cool.
Because you rolled up in here this morning like, well, I thought it was a meteor, but also maybe rockets or missiles or alien invasion.
Because I think of all possibilities because I am not closed-minded to the degree that I just automatically know what it is without actually witnessing it myself.
So, I think.
You know, government cover-ups are a thing. Mm-hmm. Aliens are a thing, whether you think they are or not. And so it could have been either one of those.
I think.
And it could have been biblical, but there was only one. So, I mean, you know, there's that too.
I think that it was a magical unicorn who gallops across the universe.
Listen to his tone.
It was unicorn poop from the magical galaxy hopping unicorn that came to visit.
Listen, Rob, we all know that the consistency of the color of unicorn poop is silver. So it couldn't be that.
You don't know that.
Sure, I do. Everyone knows that. I mean,
stop making up stuff. What we got to see yesterday was awesome. All right, we don't need to make stuff up about fireballs and rockets. It was awesome.
All All right, shout out to Tiger Truther, even though they're calling me out. He also said, but magic isn't real, Rob.
Right, that's my point.
Yeah,
literally the point. Magic isn't real, Brian Snicker!
It is real. All right, the first thing that's Xing is Tobey Maguire.
I got nothing. I got nothing. Birthday?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Oh, I got really excited there, though.
Oh, you're not going to when you find out how old he is.
Oh, no, I have had like three slap you in the junk moments about my age so far this week.
Wow, that was literally.
Shh. He's not in his 50s yet, right?
He's 50. Yes. Tobey Maguire is 50.
I take it back. It does hurt.
Yeah, I thought it would. All right. The next thing that is Xing. Hey, listen, we all get older if we're lucky. And, you know, 50 was a while ago for me. So I'm okay with it. All right, the next thing it's Xing is your boy, CM Punk.
CM Punk is Xing for one of a couple of reasons. Either A, it is because of the fact that he is in or on his way to Saudi Arabia to compete with John Cena for the WWE Championship at whatever Clash of Champions, I guess, tomorrow. Number two, he is trending because he did the... he did the ice bath podcast that Kevin Hart does the other day, and he was talking about his laundry techniques when he's traveling. He's like, the best days for me are when I have enough time between shows, I get to go home. He's like, I do laundry. He told Kevin Hart, he said, as often as I go home and do laundry, I regularly just throw away clothes and buy new clothes because it's easier. And then he asked Kevin Hart, do you do that, and is it hard to do that when you wear children's clothing? And it was like a really, really solid burn.
All right.
The only other reason it could be trending is because Seth Rollins said that he would rather the Bears never win a Super Bowl than have to tag team with CM Punk.
It's funny you said kid because it has to do with the kid coming up trying to get an autograph. And it cuts away a little bit. You can't tell if he shoved him or not, but he guided him away and denied the autograph when he landed in Saudi Arabia. And it's all over the place. The video's all over the place. Some are saying the security guard in black behind him grabbed the kid and moved him a little bit. It cuts away just at the point of contact, just like when the Coastal Carolina coach bumped that referee.
Mm-hmm.
The camera angle is not such that you can tell if he actually shoved him, shooed him, whatever. But that is why he is Xing. The next thing is Xing is the Hardy Boys.
They did a podcast or a radio show yesterday. I don't know if this is why, but they were going through like who's the most physical wrestler you face. They both said Brock Lesnar. They're playing football.
That was not. I mean, I came from my glove when I threw the ball there. They threw out the first pitch in the game between the Mets and the Braves.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yes.
Did they do well?
They did. It was a double throw. They both threw to catchers at the same time. Not bad throws. I mean, it wasn't high heat or anything, but it wasn't loopers either. Also, later on, they took out a mascot with chairs. As he was about to win the race, you know, the mascot race, they jump out with chairs.
There was not terrible. I think it was in Memphis, which makes sense. Memphis, obviously a big wrestling town. They had two heel wrestlers show up in the other team's gear. Actually, no, I think it was Nashville. I think it was for the Predators. They had two heel wrestlers show up in gear from the other team, and they had the mascot who was in a handicap match, but he held up a sign that was like, I brought a tag team partner, and it was Joe Hendry. He showed up and tagged with the Predators mascot in a live wrestling match at a hockey game. Never have Rob Brown's worlds all collided so much.
That's pretty awesome. All right, the next thing is Xing is Austin Reeves.
Austin Reeves trending because I honestly don't know.
All right, Austin Reeves was offered an extension. He turned it down.
Really?
So people are freaking out thinking that he's going to hit free agency and not be with the Lakers.
Nah, he's probably angling for an extension if I had to guess. Because let's be real, Austin Reeves is he's kind of the glue guy of the, like, every NBA team's got to have their one, like, undersized white hustle guy right now. Like, that's the new trend. You got to have a great point guard who can get assists, and you got to have an undersized heart and soul gritty white guy.
The last guy they got rid of just won a championship.
That is exactly right.
All right. So, and finally,
Tyrese had TJ, SGA had Alex, and LeBron's got Austin Reeves.
All right. And finally, the last thing that's Xing is Michael Bay.
New Transformers movie.
Yes.
Oh, really? That was a total shot in the dark.
He's coming back to Transformers. I haven't watched one in a while. Since he left, probably.
I haven't either.
Bring back Shy. I don't care if he's crazy. Bring him back.
I mean...
And John Turturro.
You still haven't said the correct name to bring back.
And Megan Fox.
There it is. Bring back Megan Fox and have her work on cars again. We all grew up a little in that moment. That's it for us. Y'all have a great weekend. Don't drink and drive. I will punch you in the face. Enjoy your weekend. Come back Monday. We'll break down the Braves and the Phillies contest. We'll be 1 week closer to football. I am Rob. He is Lonzo. We'll see you back here Monday on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. Later!